Right now in Vegas, Lauren Good, who's a senior writer for Wired.com, joins us. And she's, I'm guessing you're playing with a lot of really cool toys, Lauren. How are you doing tonight?
Good, how are you? Thanks for having me on, Patty.
Oh, my pleasure. I've been following your tweets, and I am having a blast just thinking about what it must be like there, because it's, you know, obviously wall-to-wall, massive space with robots and kitchen gadgets and all kinds of artificial intelligence. What has been some of the stuff that has surprised you the most so far?
Well, you mean aside from the voice-controlled toilets? Because that's definitely one of the things that has been at the top of everyone's mind.
What?
Or the bread-making robot, which is another thing that everyone's been talking about. I mean, the truth is that every year at CES, there are always these gadgets that grab a lot of headlines, and for good reason, like the Kohler Alexa-controlled toilet. But I think there are big overarching themes we're hearing a lot about. That's AI, that's 8K displays, that's 5G or the future of 5G. So I think those are some of the maybe the more serious things that we're going to see actually have a trickle-down effect and come to consumers sometime in the near future.
Well, since you already said trickle-down again, I have to ask about the voice-operated toilet. What could you possibly tell your toilet? I mean, do you tell it to flush so you don't have to touch anything at all?
Well, I'm not quite sure, because what I hear is that the voice activation was actually disabled during demos of this toilet.
What?
Like, let Alexa speak. But yeah, this is one of the things that we're seeing happen increasingly. You know, formerly so-called dumb products around the home are getting, you know, Wi-Fi radios, Bluetooth chips. They're tapping into these voice platforms like Amazon's Alexa and Google's Assistant, and increasingly they're just getting voice control capabilities. You could say not only to your smart lights, but maybe to, your smart scale and your smart toilet and your smart KitchenAid machine. You can use your voice to control it. It's a big theme here, and it's kind of remarkable because it really shows how the software companies, you know, are taking over what was traditionally more of a hardware-focused show.
I can't even wrap my mind around how many things in the house you can now voice control. And you've written a piece about the Google Mini now taking away that like sort of looking things up, or that human-to-human contact when it comes to translating. And that might be really good for some people who want to have a real-time translator with them. What are your thoughts on that sort of technology?
Well, that's really interesting, because over the past year or so, Google has rolled out some features to its, you know, voice-controlled assistant that honestly have unnerved on people a little bit. They showed off something last spring called Duplex, which would allow you to basically outsource your very human phone calls. Like if you were to call a restaurant for a reservation or call your hair salon, you would outsource it to the assistant, and the assistant robot would call and essentially purport to be you. And that kind of, you know, rubbed people the wrong way a little bit in the way that it was introduced. But Google has kept making its Google Assistant more and more intelligent. And so one of the things we saw this week at CES was a demo where a concierge at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas was approached by a German-speaking tourist. It was actually a Google employee, but playing the role of a German-speaking tourist. And they were able to have a conversation over the desk with the help of the Google Assistant translating the conversation for them in real time. And I think that's something that maybe seems a little bit more friendly and approachable, and something that actually has, you know, a real use case for people who are traveling a lot and having that, you know, approaching that kind of language barrier. So once again, we're seeing more and more voice control technology really kind of fill the headlines at a show like CES.
I think that does come in handy for folks who really need to communicate, especially if it comes to business or for any situation, really. I would love to be able to do that. I would think that being able to learn a little bit along the way is something that people are seeking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that this will work on is a Google Smart Display. So it's not just a speaker, but it actually has a display. So then you actually see the written language as you're having this, you know, this conversation as well. And so that does seem to be one of the, you know, the sort of more human use cases behind all of this technology.
Now, one of our listeners has a question from the 269. Do you have any information on the Whirlpool all-in-one unit washer and dryer combo? Dryer, I'm guessing. Dryer combo at the
I do not.
Oh, no.
No, I haven't seen that yet, but it sounds wonderful. Maybe I should make a point to go see that tomorrow. I wonder if that has Alexa in it, too. It probably does. Or something. Maybe you can tweet from it. I don't know.
That's one of those things that I've been wondering how long it would take. Do I have to have two units? You know, they tried to consolidate. You have the stackables. But I think everyone... But I don't know that that it's something... I haven't heard anything about it. So we'll have to check in with you and see if it's something you found. I do know that you were tweeting about the tweeting refrigerators, and you updated that to the Instagram/Pinterest refrigerators. Tell us a little bit about this family hub.
Yeah, so that, I should clarify that was more sort of like Instagram and Pinterest. So Samsung for several years now has connected its refrigerators, and that's one of the things about appliances. When appliances in the home tend to have very long upgrade cycles. People will wait several years before they get new appliances. But now, because more and more technology is, you know, coming into these machines, you're constantly upgrading them. On the upside, you have connectivity, there's more data, maybe you can like check your fridge from your phone when you're remote and see what ingredients are, you know, inside the fridge. On the downside, you're constantly now in this upgrade cycle. Samsung has something called the Family Hub, which is their sort of connected interface that exists on its newer fridges. And what you can do is you could open up your phone and take a photo that's on your phone, and you can sort of cast it to the Family Hub, and then your family could gather around the fridge and look at the photo that you've posted there on this like digital pin board, and you can like draw on it and make markings on it and things like that. So I was kind of joking that we've made our way from tweeting refrigerators, which was a thing like several years ago, to ones that feel more like a Pinterest board or an Instagram feed, because you can actually put family photos now on this digital interface on your Samsung refrigerator.
So rather than having all those magnets up there, I don't think people are going to stop doing that, because you have all the kids' artwork that you've got to put up there, and the calendars and notes to yourself. But it sounds like someplace where
absolutely
you can put something a little
paper
dynamic
for the win, right?
Exactly. And
yeah.
And you were saying too that this is something you can put, like, you know, get recipes, pull up recipes on it, and work from there if you wanted to.
Absolutely. I believe their partnership is with All Recipes, and Samsung has its own voice assistant, just like, you know, the other large tech companies now. So you could use that voice assistant called Bixby to call up a recipe right on the fridge.
I did love, by the way, your the picture of the OtterBox pop socket, because I'm a big fan of the OtterBox phone cases. But now, is this because one of the things is it's not that easy to accessorize with the OtterBox. It's a pretty heavy, clunky cover for your phone, but it's also incredibly durable. I mean, it's military grade, isn't it?
That's what OtterBox is known for. Yeah. If you're concerned about breaking your phone in any way and you want to sacrifice, or you're okay with sacrificing style, get an OtterBox, because it will absolutely protect your phone. We have an editor at Wired, Andrea Valdez, who loves pop sockets. In fact, she wrote a really great story, or a story on Wired.com a few weeks ago about her love of pop sockets. And so when we saw that there was a partnership between OtterBox and pop socket, where the pop socket is actually built directly into the back of the phone, we all said, oh, this is great. We have to like at least bring one back to her, because it seems like the perfect combination of the pop socket keeps you, you know, helps to keep you from dropping your phone. But then if you do, you've got the OtterBox protection.
For people who aren't familiar with a pop socket, it's kind of this knob on the back that you can kind of push in and pull out in order to have a better grip, right? A lot of people use it to take pictures or to prop it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's a flat disc that presses flat into the back of your phone. And then, like you said, you can pop it out. And that either allows you to kind of slip your fingers in between it while you're holding your phone, gripping your phone from the back so that you're not as likely to drop it. Or, as you pointed out, you can just pop it up. You know, it's kind of at an angle in some way. It's not totally vertical, but you prop it up at an angle and it lets you either browse or watch a video on it or take a photo or something like that.
Now, you've got a lot of people from Wired at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. How many of the writers from Wired are there? Because I saw several of your team tweeting a lot of videos out.
I would say we have at least 10 writers and editors and other members of the Wired team as well. Like, we have a much bigger team than that, but it really is a big event for us. We like to say it's like the Super Bowl of tech nerds for us. Although to say it's just for tech nerds is really not sort of fitting anymore, because tech is in everybody's lives and everybody is looking at these new products and dealing with software updates and all that stuff. So yeah, it's just like, you know, just a huge event for us.
And I love that there are so many things that really can impact people's lives positively. It's not just sort of the fun entertainment stuff. You also have some tech that can help people with disabilities as well. I was looking at the rehab tech as in the Department for People with Disabilities. Did you have a chance to check any of that out?
I personally have not, but one of my colleagues has, and that's one of the things about, you know, what's called the IoT, the Internet of Things, this whole idea of everything becoming connected, is that it's really infusing a lot of health and wellness products. So things like back braces or, you know, even exoskeletons that might help people walk and things like that are now being equipped with smarts, you know, with different chips and processors, and they're connecting to the cloud, and they're sending data back in a way that is supposed to make these products more effective. Not only more effective, but really help people who maybe, you know, maybe just have health issues. Maybe they just might get in better shape, but maybe they have serious health issues. Maybe they have mobility challenges. And all these things are like really supposed to create this feedback loop for people who need a little bit of assistance. One of the products that I saw at a press preview event the other night, which I have not had a chance to try, but it was an incontinence wearable, which I'd never heard of before. But it was basically a little thing, a sensor that you would put on your abdomen. And over time, if you suffer from incontinence issues, over time, it would start to know when your bladder was getting full, and then would alert you to that in advance. And, you know, we've seen pain management wearables. We've seen a lot of wearables that are supposed to be helpful to women who are breastfeeding, smart breast pumps, fertility trackers, and things like that. So in some ways, you know, I feel like this overarching theme of, like, just put a Bluetooth, you know, a Bluetooth chip and a Wi-Fi radio and things doesn't necessarily make it smart. And I think consumers need to be aware of that not every so-called smart product is actually that intelligent. But at the same time, I do think that this creates kind of an intelligence layer over some of these products that was not previously available.
We are talking to Lauren Good, who is covering the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. She's a senior writer for Wired, and you can go to wired.com to read all the great things that she writes, as well as follow her on Twitter. I want to find out some more about bendable screens and 5G.
Oh, yeah.
And AR and VR and XR and what the difference is. Do you mind hanging out for another segment after the news?
I'd love to.
Excellent. We'll take a break here. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Sounds like it was a windy day in Chicago. Tom Hush, producing tonight, told me that he was knocked about by the gusts. I avoided it by staying inside, Tom. I know. You had
smart
to be
move.
Places. I know. You know where it's probably not as cold. I don't know if it's windy or not in Vegas. But Lauren Good, senior writer from Wired.com, is on the line with us. She's at the Consumer Electronics Show. Lauren, how was the weather? And you can go ahead and brag to us here in Chicago. We don't mind.
Well, relative to Chicago, it's probably a little bit warmer. But I will say we're all wearing jackets here. So it's not hot. It's okay. Not desert hot. Let's put it that way.
Which also is a good thing to not have the desert heat. That's not fun either.
Exactly.
I was reading about the glasses. You had posted a picture of are they AR glasses that maybe they're a little bit less clunky than the big, huge goggles that people are using for virtual reality, but it's still not going to help you get dates. Tell us a little bit about those goggles.
Yeah, I think the CEO behind this particular company said, what's great about AR versus VR is that, you know, with VR, your head is totally enveloped in a headset, and with AR, you can still see the real world, and you can still have control over your normal life. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I thought to myself, well, they still might not help you get a date, but maybe you don't have control over all aspects of your normal life. But yeah, so I saw one particular pair of AR glasses that were interesting. They're from a Beijing-based company called Unreal. They're actually just spelled Nreal, so I'm saying Unreal, but I think that's how you say it. And they you know, look like a little bit like bulky, colorful sunglasses, but they have this sort of top-down projection technology built into the bridge of the glasses, and they, you know, project these holographic images onto the displays in front of your eyes. And we've seen a lot of implementations of AR glasses over the years that are attempting this in some way. In fact, I've been wearing another pair of AR glasses this week as I'm trolling the show floor. But this particular company was interesting because the graphics were very vivid, and they're offering something. It has to do with the field of view, how wide the field of view is when you're looking through the glasses. And in general, I tend to think that AR glasses have a little bit more promise than VR headsets, because VR headsets do require you to wear a big, bulky thing on your head, and AR glasses are getting smaller and smaller and in some ways a little bit more just like regular glasses.
How do people who have to wear glasses, are they able to do it without wearing eyewear? Or I'm not sure, because my son wears glasses for nearsightedness and farsightedness. Would he be able to use this without his glasses?
It's a really good question, and a lot of people ask this. Some are designed to go over your existing glasses, and in fact, I did see somebody wearing unreal glasses over a pair of, you know, spectacles. But in some cases, it would require you to not wear glasses, which really limits the audience. Another pair of AR glasses I've been wearing, Focals, is what they're called. The company plans to offer a subscription version of their glasses that you would actually go get custom fitted for a prescription pair of AR glasses and then presumably not have to wear your regular glasses. So that is definitely a problem that people in this industry need to solve for. It's a very real problem.
I agree. I mean, because, you know, my son, I don't think he has any plans on getting contacts. I think he's, you know, he's pretty comfortable with that. And maybe the assumption is that by now people should be getting surgeries. But, you know, there's a sizable part of the population that's still going to wear glasses. I like AR. I can do the virtual reality big goggles. I have the Daydream by Pixel. And I do enjoy hanging out in my Netflix log cabin up in the mountains. It's much cleaner.
That's right. I think that's one of the first applications people use when they put on the Daydream. I don't know how frequently do you use the Daydream headset?
When I first got it, I used it more often because that cabin is much more clean than my house. So it was kind of nice to just hang out there, and you can look out and see people on the slopes, and it's a lot of fun. It is disorienting too. I think for a lot of people, it's hard to get used to, you know, for balance, and you know, you don't want to watch too many movies in a row. I ended up watching Orange is the New Black, which is a weird thing to watch in AR. Who needs to do that?
Well, yeah, I think the thing too, to your point, I think when people think they're going to be watching Netflix in VR, they think they're going to be like in the show. You know, it's one of those technologies that's really hard to verbalize and, you know, and explain until someone's actually put the headset on their head. They think you think you're going to be like in a Netflix show, but what really happens is like you end up in this, like this Aspen Lodge or something, right? And
yes.
And that's the virtual environment, but then you're still looking at a 2D flat television screen in front of you. Maybe you get a TV upgrade, like a virtual TV upgrade. I don't know, but it's still like pretty much just still watching like flat TV.
Yeah, and the most disturbing part is I can't put my feet up on that coffee table in the log cabin. That bothers me.
Right. You have the phantom limb.
Exactly. Now, I was reading that Samsung is in 70% of American homes. That seems ginormous.
It did seem ginormous. When you think about Samsung's reach, though, between mobile phones and appliances, and Samsung is a chip maker, and Samsung has a voice assistant, and of course the television business. The company did say that at their press conference yesterday.
That's crazy. So are they, and I know that you talked a little bit about the Notebook 9. Did you get a chance to get your hands on that one?
I did not, actually, no. And, you know, in laptops and PCs are normally a pretty big part of CES announcements. I will say this year, that seems kind of muted. It doesn't seem to be as much emphasis on PCs. And that may be partly because a lot of the computers that are running on Intel chips are actually now, they're still shipping with Intel 8th generation processors. Intel's 9th generation processors have been delayed in 2019. And so the PCs that we're seeing this week don't have like the absolute latest and greatest chipsets. And so I think that's at least part of the reason why the PC announcements have been a little bit more muted than in years past.
Now, they do have the bendable screen. I watched a little bit of the video, and one of the things that cracked me up was that guy standing behind the woman who was trying to do the demonstration, and he wouldn't get out. I love that she has carried on, and he just watched her the whole time, and it was kind of like he was waiting for her to get out of the way. Did you see that video?
Was it the LG video, or which one was it?
She folded the tablet in half.
Oh, okay. That might have been FlexPie. I'm not sure exactly which one you're talking to because there have been a couple foldable screens, bendable displays, whatever you want to call them, announced in recent weeks.
And how do you like those bendable screens? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the purpose for me. I guess because we're all kind of worried about breaking them. Is that one of the things that you don't have to worry about is any kind of shattering?
I think that could be part of it. But I think there are two ways to look at foldable displays. Well, first of all, they have been sort of a presence at CES for several years now. I mean, foldable display technology, or at least the attempts to make foldable displays, goes back quite a while. So I think in a lot of ways, they'll be great for commercial applications, and you could see how maybe a giant folding display is something that could be brought out temporarily and then kind of like folded or tucked away into a smaller environment or shipped really easily. Mm-hmm. Or you could see how there might be like more immersive, you know, marketing advertising content and something that's like a foldable display or something like that. And then I think there's the consumer application, which is, hey, wouldn't it be great if when I'm commuting, I can have something that's tablet sized, and then when I need to, you know, get on the go or something, or hop on my bike, or hop sit in the car, like I can fold it up and throw it in my bag, and then it's phone sized again. So I think that those are the two sort of approaches that people are taking. I think to date, though, most of the examples have been pretty gimmicky. LG this year did show off its foldable display again, which is something it showed off last year. It's called the Signature OLED TV R. But the news this year is that they said it will be available for purchase in the second half of 2019. So you might be able to buy a foldable display. Another company called FlexPi showed off the FlexPi, which it showed off late last year. But this is like a 7.8-inch gadget that it's an Android tablet. And when it's extended, it's like, you know, it's like a tablet. And then it closes to be something that's more like the size of an Android phone. I saw pictures of it. It looks kind of hokey, to be honest. You know, the display doesn't look that great. So I still think these need a lot of work. But they're certainly fun to look at for CES.
Yeah, they're fun to play with. There's a listener who has a question. Now, were there any robotic pets there, like robotic dogs? Did you see anything?
Yes, Sony brought its Aibo, I hope I'm saying that correctly, Aibo dog, which is something that we saw like late last year. They brought out and they're like, oh, here's Aibo again, because this is like the dog that keeps coming back in different life forms. It's completely adorable. We saw other robots as well, but I would say that's the one robot pet that stands out in my mind.
And do you happen to know what the price range is on that? Because they're wondering if it's affordable.
That's a really good question. I think it's around $3,000.
Well, I'm gonna say it's not that affordable. Before I let you go, there's one listener who mentions the Moto Z3, which my husband and my son have, and my son loves it because of all the attachments you can put on that, and they continue to use that across the different phones, don't they? I think 2 and 3 can still use the same snap-ons.
So the Moto Z3 is interesting because it's considered the world's quote-unquote first 5G upgradable smartphone. I'm not sure if that's the snap-ons you're talking about, but are they using the 5G backpack on that?
No, they do. Like, Griffin's got like a projector. He can also boost the sound with like the pods that snap on, which are pretty cool.
Oh, the Moto Mods.
Yes.
Moto Mods. Okay, cool. Yeah. So one of the interesting things about the Moto Z3 is that it technically has a mod, you know, a little backpack that you can snap on it that makes it a quote-unquote 5G phone. And 5G has been a really big topic this year at CES as well. It's still pretty premature. 5G is not something that has rolled out in a real way or certainly not even close to nationwide availability. But you do keep hearing the Moto Z3 being talked about as one of the examples of like an early example of a hackable 5G phone.
I've learned so much just in the last two segments. We're talking to Lauren Good. She's senior writer with Wired.com. I'd love to check in with you again, especially as 5G continues to be something people are trying to figure out. And I know Verizon has rolled that into their different markets. So I'd love to catch up with you on that and other topics whenever you have time, Lauren.
I would love to come back on. Thanks for having me, Patty.
Thank you so much. Follow her on Twitter at Lauren Good. That's Good with an E. And you can also follow all the work that she does at Wired.com. Have a great night. Enjoy Vegas. Stay warm for us. We're jealous.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to check in with Renato Mariotti when we come back right after this on 720 WGN. Tom, have I ever mentioned that I somehow ended up having many, many, many friends who have law degrees? My mother wanted me to be a lawyer. And instead, I just grew up to be friends with a lot of lawyers.
Well, that's just as good in a certain sense. You know, you'll always have legal representation.
Or at least advice. And when there are high-profile legal stories in the news, we are fortunate to have the phone number and the ear and the perspective of one of my good friends, Renato Mariotti. He's a legal analyst for CNN, former federal prosecutor, and, of course, a regular on my show. He hosts his own podcast, On Topic, which you can find anywhere you find podcasts. And, Renato, I thought there were two stories that I texted you about, and then you said there were four, and I thought, well, then we have to keep you longer. So you have extended your stay on your own, just so you know.
Oh, great. Wow. Well, let's hope Robert Mueller doesn't do anything over the next 20 minutes or I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Well, how many times, at this point, how many times a day are you appearing on CNN to answer their questions on panels?
Well, you know, too many times. And it's funny, today I actually had, I represent clients for a living. I actually do real legal work. On the other side of things, now that I'm no longer a federal prosecutor, I represent people who are under investigation, and I was busy with clients today, so I had to say no, and all my followers on Twitter and others were asking me questions. I was getting all these emails from journalists, and I had to focus on doing legal stuff, so you are my first media appearance today.
Well, I hope that it's also a way for you to unwind and share all the things that you've been thinking about. The one that caught my attention first, I would say, was when I read that Manafort's legal team had a filing that was supposed to be redacted, but ended up actually sharing a lot of information, including the fact, was this the one where he had shared polling information in 2016 to Russian operatives?
Yes. So, first of all, so what happened today is that Manafort's plea deal got blown up, okay, weeks ago, because he had, according to Mueller and his team, Manafort had lied to Robert Mueller and the FBI agents. Generally a bad idea to do, especially when you're trying to cooperate with them. So they blew up the deal. And Manafort's attorney said, well, we're going to contest this, and they wanted the ability to do a filing on it. They did that yesterday, and it turned out they essentially didn't contest that he made false statements to Mueller. They just said, well, he didn't mean to, he forgot or made a mistake or whatever. But then, as you point out, Patty, there was portions of it they were supposed to redact because there was secret stuff that wasn't known to the public. And what happened is they didn't redact in the appropriate way. And so, what enterprising journalists were able to do is essentially select the text that had been redacted and copy and paste it elsewhere, and they could see it. So
it seems careless. That's the kind of thing where you go, really? Are you really my legal team?
You know, but here's the funny thing. This sort of stuff happens to lawyers all the time. In fact, this redaction problem happens often enough that the IT folks at my law firm sent around guidance on it, I don't know, it was months ago. It happened when I was a prosecutor. There were things like this that happened. And we've had, you know, there have been other legal snafus just in the past year. I mean, the fact that Julian Assange has been indicted was revealed to the public due to a mistake by a Justice Department lawyer. So it does happen. There were some conspiracy theories online that this was intentional. And that's the reason I bring this up. Lawyers do make mistakes. But generally, when you're involved in a very high-profile case, you try really, really hard to dot your T's, dot your I's and cross your T's to make sure that doesn't happen.
Now, but the content of it, though, or the information that he was selling, or he was sharing polling information to Russian operatives, what's the significance of that? Because it doesn't sound great.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the number one significance to it is, it's, as you point out, it sounds really bad. And there isn't a very good innocent explanation for it. Like, why would you go and meet with a Russian intelligence operative and share with him internal polling data from the campaign, which is a secret, for what good reason? So, you know, you could imagine a prosecutor, for example, drawing the inference or the conclusion that Manafort wanted to trade that data, you know, and say, look, can you help us, you know, use this data to help us win the campaign, the presidential campaign? Or maybe, you know, he was saying, look, here's some data, you know, make use of it. I hope you'll help us. Or, you know, hey, here's some data about our campaign. We're going to win, so we want to cut a deal with you of some kind.
Right.
We need your help. I mean, it's bad, and I've come up with some explanations for it that aren't criminal, But they also don't sound particularly innocent or benign either.
Well, what would be an instance where it's not criminal? Just like, hey, look what I've got. What do you guys think about this information? Or I don't see an instance in which it's not something to broker a deal.
Yeah, here would be the best I could come up with for Mr. Manafort. If I was representing Mr. Manafort, okay. What I would say is, well, look, he was in debt to some Russian oligarchs for millions of dollars. He wanted to impress them, wanted to show them that his access to the potential president of the United States was valuable. So he's showing them the polling data to say, hey, this guy could really win. You really want to be my friend and forego my debt.
Well,
and, you know, maybe that happened. It's still not exactly innocent sound. It doesn't sound great.
No.
It's not a crime, but it's not good.
No, none of it sounds very good. We are hanging out with Renato Mariotti. He's a legal analyst for CNN, former federal prosecutor. If you have any questions or thoughts, we encourage you to call or text us at 312-981-7200. He's also a former candidate for attorney general for the state of Illinois. And are you heading down to Springfield for the inauguration by any chance?
I am going to be, that'll be interesting.
See, I was hoping to go, but I think I'm going to stay in Chicago and just watch some of it on TV. So you'll have to Facebook Live some of it for us or somehow share video of what's going on, the festivities, as it were.
I'll see what I can do.
Let me take a quick break here, and we'll check back in with Renato Mariotti in just a moment. I know we've got just a quick break, right? And then we'll go to the news. And if you have any questions, and I want to talk a little bit about an indictment that came down from the Southern District of New York, but is the target of the indictment ever going to come back to the United States? That's kind of, I doubt it. More in a moment on 720 WGN. I wish it was a people's court. I feel like we could get things done a lot more quickly. We had Judge Judy taking care of things. But in the meantime, we can get some perspective from CNN's legal analyst, Renato Mariotti. He's also the host of his own podcast, On Topic, former federal prosecutor. And I was off the air with him, Tom Hush, who's producing today. I was trying to pronounce the name of the woman who was indicted by the Southern District of New York. I believe I've come up with Natalia Vysotnitskaya. Nope, I don't have it. I tried, Renato.
Wow, that's impressive. I always call her the Trump Tower meeting lady.
The Trump Tower meeting lady. Well, she's no longer in the States. Now, she has been she's been indicted by the Southern District of New York. Is that right?
That's right. So she was indicted today because there was a civil case that she was involved in, and she fabricated documents and obstructed the judicial system as to that civil lawsuit. And what's interesting there, what I would say is the takeaway for folks at home, is that it was clear from the criminal case there that this woman has very deep connections to the Russian government and essentially was working as an agent more or less of the Russian government. And the reason that's interesting is because she was the lady who met with Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort at that infamous meeting at Trump Tower.
So not necessarily related directly to the Mueller's investigation at all, which is why he hasn't indicted her. Is that right?
That's correct. So, you know, if anything, she may ultimately be a witness in if she was ever in the United States as to the Trump Tower meeting. But what I think it suggests is, you know, there was emails to Donald Trump Jr. before the meeting, in which it said that he was going to meet with somebody who was a representative of the Russian government as part of the Russian government's aid to his father. And then this woman showed up, and I think there was a sense or an argument from Trump Jr. and his allies that, hey, this is just some random lawyer who happens to be Russian, and it turns out now she's actually associated or, some sort of agent or operative of the Russian government.
Renato, before I ask you about the next story, have you ever in your life seen this many high-profile investigations into, possible business, political relationships with Russia, ever?
Not with Russia. I mean, I will tell you, I investigated plenty of people whom I could have continued to investigate for years and years and years. I remember telling one defense attorney that his client committed so much fraud that I literally could have investigated the guy. I could spend the next several years of my life continuing to investigate new crimes by the same guy. He ultimately was convicted of some crimes. I mean, here, what's interesting here is all of these random people associated with the Trump campaign and administration have some connection to Russia. There's clearly something going on there. I think the question for me, when I look at it from a legal perspective, is how much of that is any of that a crime? I think there's no question that there's significant connections to Russia here. The question is, you know, what does that mean legally? And that's a different story.
So there was there's another case then with an alleged Russian troll farm, and the legal counsel for that troll farm apparently they used an Animal House quote to attack Robert Mueller. Sounds like the judge wasn't too thrilled with them.
Yeah, so the judge was very animated. She, by the way, you know, just to give you a sense, she was appointed by President Trump. You know, she, you know, and one thing that goes to show you, I think Chief Justice Roberts was right when he said recently that there's no such thing as Trump judges or Obama judges. They're all federal judges that work together and try their best. So she was just very frustrated because the behavior of these attorneys from a large law firm representing this Russian troll farm that has been indicted by Robert Mueller for trying to subvert our elections, they were just kind of out, you know, kind of doing some wacky stuff, over the top filings on their part, like you said, Animal House quotes, etc. She criticized them in open court and told them to knock it off. She called a special court hearing, had them come in, and she told them, knock it off. This is not helping your case. This is, you know, this is not appropriate. And so what did they do? Today they filed a new document blasting her and the entire process, kind of doubling down on the same strategy. Very foolish. I had one very prominent lawyer messaging me separately today in private saying, you know, what's up with these guys? I mean, do they expect to, you know, these lawyers expect to, you know, have a legal career when this is over? Because, you know, certainly I'll tell you in my experience and in his, if you act this way towards a federal judge, disrespectful, rude, over the top, unprofessional, all the judges hear about it very quickly. And I think it ruins your reputation as a lawyer. So very odd behavior there. Right? It must be dictated by their client in some way, but most lawyers wouldn't go along with a client who demanded that.
Now, in one of the other high-profile cases, there is this mystery company that are they before the Supreme Court, or is this the one that still has? I can't keep track of all the investigations, all the different filings and hearings and courtrooms that are. But the Supreme Court has this mystery company in front of them. Is that right?
That's right, or they did until today. I will tell you, Patty, it's like a treadmill for me. I one of my jobs is for CNN is keeping a track of this stuff, and it is a challenge.
That's why I keep saying, is that right? Because I can't keep track. I'm like, is this right? Is that right? I don't even know. So tell us about this mystery company.
No. Yeah, so there's a mystery company that was subpoenaed by Robert Mueller through a grand jury subpoena. They challenged the subpoena in the lower courts, in the trial court, and then the Court of Appeals. They went all the way, the Court of Appeals ordered them to comply with the subpoena and instituted a sanction that increased on a daily basis. I think it was $50,000 a day, I think, if they didn't comply. And this is a business that apparently is owned by a foreign government, but does business in the United States. And there's been a lot of speculation as to what it is. We don't know. You know, some people say it's Russia Today, the Russia propaganda outfit that's here in the United States. Who knows?
Right.
But in any event, they go up to the Supreme Court, and Chief Justice Roberts stays, in other words, freezes that penalty. The court, and so people were wondering, is the Supreme Court going to take this in reverse and give them this company a break? The answer is no. Today, the Supreme Court got rid of Chief Justice Roberts' stay and denied their motion to the Supreme Court, and so these folks are going to have to comply with their subpoena just like everyone else.
Well, speaking of the Supreme Court, a lot of people, I'm sure, are wondering about Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg. And I'm just reading a piece that says that she can stay on the Supreme Court and vote no matter how sick she becomes. Have you heard that? Is that your understanding?
That is true. And, yeah, in fact, I think when Justice Stevens was sickly, at times he was in Florida, I remember having trouble, he was voting. There have been justices that hung on for a long time. Justice Brennan is another one that comes to mind. It would not surprise me. The way our constitutional system works is that judges are appointed for life. And so many of them stick on for as long as possible. There's a lot of people who have ideas of how that system could be different, but this one's written into our Constitution, so it's not changing anytime soon.
I'm sorry, I was just asking my my friend. I forgot. I thought my mic was off, and I wanted to see if Mike Silver, who joined us in studio. I know you have a question, Mike Silver, that a lot of people ask Renato Mariotti, because you texted it at me, but you're welcome to ask this one again, because Renato definitely has thoughts on this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you guys had discussed it. Hey, Mike, I just walked into the studio,
yes.
I was curious. So I'm curious about your opinion on the opinion of the Department of Justice about indicting a sitting president. And is that like from con law? Is that constitutional? Or where did that come from? And what are your opinions on that?
Great question. You know, you're right, Patty, that I have an opinion. We did a whole podcast on this with the former Solicitor General of the United States discussing this matter. And essentially, the point is this. United States Constitution does not say one way or the other whether or not a sitting president, as president who's in office, can be indicted. It's not discussed in the Constitution explicitly. And in fact, it's an issue that's never come before a court. Nixon, there was talk, you know, it looked like he was going to get indicted, but he resigned beforehand. No other president has been indicted while they're in office, so it's never something a court's had to deal with. And so we don't know for sure how a court would rule on this issue. So people have differing opinions. I'd say that I'm not a constitutional law scholar or practitioner in the way that the former Solicitor General, Neil Cotill, is, or others in that area. But most of them, I think, believe that a sitting president either can't be indicted or at the very least can't be tried while in office. And I think they give two different reasons for that. One is, you know, I've heard some people argue that since the Constitution provides for impeachment, that's the remedy that's available for the president. They wouldn't provide that remedy wouldn't be there if indictment was a possibility. I've also heard from other folks, and Neil was one of them, who said that, for example, you could imagine if President Lincoln had been indicted by a South Carolina district attorney right when the Civil War was going on, you know, would you want a president who could be taken off the job to deal with legal problem like that? And that's how that argument goes. I would say, you know, from my perspective, the Supreme Court has already said that that a president is not above the law as to civil lawsuits, which could be just as distracting, as Bill Clinton found out. I don't really understand the distinction or see the distinction. But the bottom line is that the Justice Department has long taken the view, since the Nixon era, that a sitting president can't be indicted. So regardless of what my opinion is or your opinion is, that's what we can expect the Justice Department and Robert Mueller to comply with.
Yeah, go ahead.
Has anyone brought in front of the Justice Department the argument of the sitting president committed these crimes to become president, right? I mean, there's difference between committing a crime before your presidency or after your presidency, but if your presidency is caused because of a crime, and also the statute of limitations, from my understanding on this, is like 5 years for something like this. Is that true?
By the way, I think I know this one. This is where they toll it, right? They suspend once they are filed. They can suspend the amount of time that lapses between when the crime was committed and when they continue to prosecute. Did I get that right?
Well, it's an interesting thing. So, you know, Patty's listened to my podcast, so she know Neil Cotill came on and said that.
Okay.
He's 30-something cases in front of the Supreme Court, very learned guy. I will tell you that it's not at all a settled issue. No one's ever, you know, that's never come up. You know, the courts do not just consider questions the way we are on the air. Like, you don't get, like, you can't just, like, send a tweet to the Supreme Court and then they give you their thoughts on it.
So what?
Unless a case makes it up there, you never know what they actually think on these issues. So we don't really know. But, yeah, that's one possibility. But to get to your question, we've never had a situation where a president could be indicted for, you know, potentially defrauding himself into office. I don't know what would happen there. I mean, I actually think a harder case would be a president, you know, who's committing crimes while in office that are very blatant, right? You could imagine, what if you have a president who's, like, selling stuff, like selling, you know, I'll sell pardons for $1 million each, or, you know, taking bribes.
Yeah, what are the limits?
Something
yeah.
like that, right? Because you... Yeah, you can imagine a president you know, doing all sorts of crazy things while they're while he or she is in office. Does that mean they're just totally immune? We could have this, like, as long as they buy off 34 senators, then they can, and they can't get convicted in the Senate, they can just, you know, live out their time, you know, as president for those 8 years. So I, you know, to me, those are really absurd results. But I don't, you know, I don't have an answer for you, because I'm being honest and just tell you that, you know, no one really knows. And, you know, this is what the debate is. The point that I explained earlier.
Well, I appreciate that. Renato, it's been great hanging out with you, and I know that you had a busy day, and we've got more stuff to do tomorrow. So get some rest, and I'll be talking to you on your podcast on Topic. And if folks want to ask more questions, you can go to you can follow him on Twitter, at Renato. It's Renato _Mariotti. You can also find him on CNN pretty regularly, and I look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Thank you, Renato.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a great night. That was awesome. More after this on 720 WGN. Direct from our PPG Paints green room, we have in studio with us Danny and Michael, who are performing at Sketchfest, opening this Thursday. Their performance is going to be on Saturday, January 12th. They're with the Comedy Dance Chicago, which, now, did you guys know when you chose the name it was going to look like CDC?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
We put a little asterisk at the bottom of our explanation of our group saying, hey, we are not the disease control. Please don't yell at us.
Maybe not everybody goes. They don't all go right to CDC.
Yeah. I hope not. For our first show, we actually opened the show with, like, oh, and now presenting Sketchfest presents CDC, and then the graphic for Centers for Disease Control pops up on the screen, and we come out and yell at the tech lab, like, no, it's not, where did you get to our graphic? And then you see, like, a T-Rex and a tutu, and it says CDC, and I don't think anyone seeing a T-Rex and a tutu will think Centers for Disease Control.
No.
Unless they're rebranding.
Sure.
They're trying to be hip.
Well, and that's the beauty of Sketchfest and events like this, where you can do the absurd, the funny, the in the moment. And tell us a little bit about the performance you guys have put together this year, because it's always so engaging. and also there are moments that it can be poignant and can be cutting, and through dance and comedy, it's incredible.
Yeah, so this year's show is some of our favorite pieces we've done for the past 3 years.
It's kind of our best show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so it's a decent amount of material from the past year, actually. So a lot of it's new. We've got a great, highly interactive opener where we get the audience all warmed up physically. You know, some of them we got to get them up on stage. And emotionally, we go through the whole gamut of emotions. And then we just launch right into our show, and it's about 45 minutes, probably 40 to 45 minutes. We've got some solo pieces. Danny has a really great solo piece.
Do you know the song, My Milkshakes Bring the Boys to the Yard?
I do know that song.
Familiar? Yeah.
So Danny has a solo piece with that. We have a lot of food pieces this year. We have a sriracha piece, sriracha slide. We've got a nice Twizzler piece, and then a milkshake piece. A lot of food.
But is there food for the audience? You can't make people hungry and, you're going to toss food at them?
I mean, we're not tossing the milkshake at them.
No, please don't. But, I see somebody with a tray going around. Remember when Oprah would have, like, a chef on, and everyone would get a bowl of really good macaroni and cheese?
Just like that. Yes,
yeah,
chef.
Totally. We definitely have unlimited budget. We can just feed everyone the whole time. Absolutely.
Get those numbers in. Are you doing it in the thrust again this year?
Yeah, we're doing it in the thrust.
That's the best base for you.
It's so perfect for us. Yeah. It's the three-quarter thrust. So for those who don't know what that is, it means there's audience on three sides of the stage. So it's a big kind of square stage that juts out in the middle of the audience. And for movement groups and other dance groups prefer that stage when they perform at 773 because you can see the ground, which that means you can now get on the ground and do stuff, or your feet matter. So some stages it's hard to see the feet if you're like in traditional comedy spaces like Second City or IO, those can be harder. And then also you get like almost 360 to do your moves.
I mean it's also an exciting challenge for us too, because we get to, since we're in the audience, we get to make all of our pieces. We perform in a lot of proscenium spaces, so it's exciting to spread our pieces out and give everyone a little something, a little something, something.
Well, and that brings the energy up of the audience, too, because they're in the middle of it. And if you're with them, you also feed off of that, don't you?
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love it. Yeah, with our show is just generally positive. We avoid controversy. That's not, like, the goal of Comedy Dance Chicago is just to have fun and have fun with the audience. So I feel like compared to other shows that I've been a part of, this one, it's easier to win over the audience quickly, and then you're just having fun with them.
Yeah.
That's really the thing, is once they get it, right, once they're in it, they're along for the ride. That's the beauty of it. And as part of Sketchfest, you guys really set yourself apart as something that brings a new element, you know, something different. I mean, because I can't think of, I don't think I've ever seen a comedy dance troupe, really.
No. So when we started, we were kind of looking around for that. And the only thing we'd find similar is a dance studio.
Or
would maybe
Bloomin' Group.
Oh, Bloomin'. Okay.
But like,
all right. That's not dance.
That's more acoustic. More interesting. And nothing on Bloomin' Group.
No, they're great.
Upset. But yeah, they're amazing.
Oh, but no, Bloomin' Group like, actually was like one of the closest commercialized things we found that we were like, okay, this is purely visual. It's very visual and music, which is what we are, visual and music. We're not all silent, though. We'll do some, you know, we have
to talk. Right, you're not mimes.
No, we're not mimes.
We do a lot of play on words, I feel like.
Yeah.
But, you know, like Dirty by Christina Aguilera comes on as the Germs are dancing.
Yeah. A lot of the Germs on some of them.
We do a lot of play on
germs.
Words.
Germs.
Yeah. Hey, gotta come see it.
Yeah, you gotta come see it.
Now going back to the CDC stuff.
Yeah, Lord. We should play that in that piece. We need you as a consultant.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
But the stuff that we found similar, like to fully choreographed or partially choreographed, was mostly like a dance studio that during their recital would be like, oh, and now this is a fun piece compared to the serious tap piece or the very emotional modern piece. So it's not like a troupe has ever really, that we found, has tackled kind of, we want all of our pieces to be comedic and visual and movement based.
And again, I love what you bring to Sketchfest. Sketchfest opens this Thursday. You can go to stage773.com. How many groups are performing this year?
It's like, it's always like 180. It's always up there. And it's, over 2 weekends. So we have groups coming in from all over the nation, from Canada, from different other nations. And there's 4 theater spaces at 773. Each one has a new show on the hour, every hour from like 7 to midnight Thursday. And then Sunday starts earlier and Saturday starts earlier. So it's like 180 different shows that you, if you get a festival pass, you can come and check them out all weekends for both weekends.
I am going to be performing. I'll be there on September. Well, that would be weird if it was September. But wait a minute, you guys didn't really want me in the festival. I'll be there on Sunday, January 20th. I'm performing in the box, I believe. I like the box for me for a solo show.
The cab? The smallest one?
No, I think I'm actually in the box this year.
Cool.
I'll take a double look. But everyone will know when they get there. I think they rated my show R this year. I probably should have been better about staying on top of the information. Do you think I need to write it to that? I don't necessarily do an R show, but I guess, you know, it's better
add
to be
in
forewarned.
A couple swear words, I
guess. I was, but it's fine. And I have the show's actually called Rhymes with Duck. So I guess I could see maybe they were worried that's. Maybe. I mean, truck.
Yeah,
also,
truck.
Right, luck.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of words.
But then you get suck.
Oh, well, there you go. There's that one.
We'll
I know.
But actually, I'm. It's kind of going to be off of this piece that I read about whether or not you should swear in front of your kids. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, too.
So, oh, cool.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more with our guests. We're hanging out with Danny and Michael. They're performing with the Comedy Dance Chicago. They're going to be on stage at Stage 773. It's part of Sketchfest this Saturday at 9 p.m. in the Thrust Theater. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Sketchfest opens this Thursday night. You can go to stage773.com to find out about the schedule. There's like over 100 groups that are performing this year. The festival runs January 10th through the 20th, and tickets are now on sale. There's something for everybody, including the rated R show Rhymes with Duck, apparently. And but there are kids shows on Sunday. There's the Comedy Dance Collective this Saturday.
Yep.
At 9 p.m. in the Thrust Theater. When you get there, they'll tell you what theater you're going to. You don't necessarily have to know which. Just know CDC.
Mm-hmm. CDC.
Just think hazmat suits, which is weird now that I say that. But, you know what I mean. But an incredible group that will delight you. And here's the thing. You don't have to. You can go for one show. You can buy passes to more than one show.
Yep.
You can see there are solo shows. There are sketch groups. As Michael said earlier, there are groups from all over the world. Now, are you still on the board of directors?
I'm one of the producers for the festival. And so we have, like you were saying, there's solo shows, whether it's sketch or stand-up. There's a lot of musical comedy. There's some people use a lot of like tech, like really cool tech with their stuff. It always blows my mind who comes and what they bring. I love doing it. I've done it for about 5 years. I've been a producer for 2, and I absolutely love it.
And I probably should check out, see when my tech date is. You know, James, as stand-up comics, we require a lot of lighting cues.
Absolutely.
And fog machine. Yes. There's a lot of sound.
A lot of setup.
I hope bubbles.
Bubbles. Ooh,
little pyrotechnics.
I thought of a lighting cue on my way to my actual performance, and I was like messaging Candace, and I was like, "What's that thing where the lights like follow each other?" She goes, "You mean chasers?" Yeah, can we do that? That's about all I ask for.
We,
it's like from a bad acid trip too.
A little bit, yes.
We just came from tech, so that's why we were like, we had our tech tonight, and so we spent an hour there, and we have a lot of cues.
Yes, you do.
I mean, we have a lot of music. I mean, we're a musical kind of group. A lot mm-hmm. of different cues. Like, cool, when they point to the right, that's when the song starts, and like, mm-hmm. or when they say this dumb little word, then and so she's. They got to be on it with us, which we're blessed that a lot of times they just pick it up and go with it.
Oh, no, they're incredible. And yeah. they're so adaptable. And they're really patient because they have so many groups that come in and out. Just know this. There's always someone who has that's going to give them a harder time than you do.
Oh, yeah. I know about that. I'm there for those where there's a busted gallon of milk on the stage or, oh, yeah. Those.
Well, and that's the hard thing, too, because now, James, every group has about 40 to 45 minutes. Every hour, there's a new show.
I've actually been part of a team that performed at
Chicago. Oh, cool. It's crazy and hectic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I was there 1 year, and the group relied heavily on visuals on a screen with a computer and everything, and the guy who was supposed to run it, do you remember this, a couple years ago, got sick?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, no.
And they had to adapt, and they were great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about the performers that are at Sketchfest. They're professional. They're talented, and as we said, from all over the world. So we encourage you to go to stage773.com for all the ticket information for the lineup. And there are shows starting this Thursday. It runs Thursday through Sunday, the 13th, and then again next Thursday, the 17th through Sunday, the 20th. You can see my show, Rhymes with Duck. This time we didn't actually put the title of the show because everyone told me that they didn't know how to find my show because it wasn't my name. Yeah. So this year it's Patty Vasquez.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fine. Just come find me and hang out. Otherwise, I'll be in the lobby begging people to come see me.
I'll be there. I love your stuff.
Well, and Rhymes with Duck, James, has a lot to do with language and how yeah. we use it and how I grew up using language. Now, a lot of people who listen to this show will say, Patty talks too quickly. And I kind of try to adjust. I try to be measured. I change the pace. Sometimes I get excited about a topic. And sometimes I'm, you know, there's just so much I want to communicate, so many things I want to get to.
I've never thought talking to you in person, like, oh my God, she's saying it. Too quickly. You know what I mean?
I've never
had that thought.
What is she talking about?
Yeah,
mostly because I'm asking you to take me to the ice cream place.
Exactly.
In Columbus, Indiana.
This is easy to understand.
Yeah, she's not that bad. But when I was growing up, my mother would swear in front of me, right, without any caution. And my father was very strict about swearing. It was a very confusing childhood for me. And now there's this psychologist who says that he thinks it's okay to swear around your kids, that being verbally abusive is not okay. That there's a difference between cussing and being, you know, aggressive towards your child. I don't know if I'm comfortable with saying that you should swear in front of your kid. There's a comedian in Canada who said, like, he sort of unpacked it as his kids got older. Like, he didn't until they were about 11 or 12. And now it's like, it's very much more casual. Tom, did your parents swear in front of you?
Yeah, like a lot. Like my dad was from Scotland.
Okay.
Like the C word is a term of endearment there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a sort of thing where, I don't know if it's, should parents, like, you don't have to, but
no,
I don't think it's a big deal if you do. It's just one of those things where it's, you don't want to take the, you know, imagine life is like a piece of chicken, and you don't want to not have the spice. You don't want to have, like, a lack of swearing.
The different
swearing
flavors.
Spice. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's fun.
Swearing is the spice of life. Yeah.
It is.
I don't know about that either.
It's the spice of language.
I have been struggling with this since Griffin. So we were on our way to Thanksgiving dinner when Griffin was 7 years old. Like, I only, at that point, I'd only sworn in front of him, as far as I knew, twice. And once when I almost hit a pedestrian, right? It was this guy who had a roller bag and he was trying to cross the street. And I was like, he was trying to let me go, but he was a pedestrian and he had the right of way. So I was waving him through and he was waving me through. And finally he wouldn't go. So I started to go and he started to go. And that's when Griffin heard me say the S word, right? Like poop.
Yeah.
But, and then for 10 minutes, Griffin was saying, what does that mean, mommy? And he kept using the word over and over again. When he was a little bit old, he was only two at that point. It's hard to not laugh at your kid, but you also don't want to encourage them to keep saying that. So yeah, at two, no, I couldn't have that happen. And then a while later, this is before I swore in front of him again. He was probably about four. He was in his car seat and he was rhyming everything with duck.
No.
And I was just trying so hard. I'm like, please don't. And like, I was waiting. I was bracing myself for when he got to the word and to not react, just act like all the other words he'd already said, because if you make it a bigger deal, then he'll keep doing it. So I didn't. And he never got to it. It was like luck and truck and muck. And he was looking for more words. I thought, is it not in your alphabet? And he would add, consonants to, drunk. He even got to drunk, but I was like, that doesn't even rhyme with duck. Yeah. Now you're like spelling a different word.
That's slam rhyme, honey.
Like slam rhyme. So I was trying to find that space of being a good parent. And how do you react if he does use that word? And then one time we were traveling and he accidentally locked us out of our hotel room. Right, we were putting things in the hallway, and I had put a bag to hold the door open, and he came out, brought the bag with him, thinking he was helping,
right,
and closed the door behind him. So we were all locked out of our hotel room, and it was just one of the, and I just, yeah, I used the F word, but because yeah. We had gone through a lot, yes. With Griffin, I've tried very hard to make sure that he understands that it's a word that adults these are words that adults use, and it's not always okay that they use them. It's when they're frustrated, they can't think of something smarter to say. I told him you will get in trouble for doing it. Thank you for asking.
I went to an all boys Catholic high school on the south side of Chicago. And I didn't agree with a lot of what they taught. overall, great experience.
All right.
But there was this one, Brother Mahoney, my sophomore year English teacher, and he said a few things that I would always remember, and one of them was about swearing, where he said, if you're always swearing, how does anyone know when you're serious?
Right, when you're actually mad about something, when you're spicing things up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because you're just going along. That's a good point.
That stuck with me.
So, and speaking to your point earlier that you were like, oh, if you don't give too much attention to it or laugh at it, they won't do it. My mom didn't like to swear in front of us. And every once in a while, something would slip out. And she would do similar things to you. Like, oh, it's a thing adults do. It's not always good. But when I was in fourth grade, I found that when I sweared in front of older kids, they gave me all the attention because they thought it was hysterical that this little fourth grader is cussing. So then I became a sailor. I was literally like fifth and sixth grade, not around adults, but around kids. I'm dropping them. I'm just, and I'm seeing how hard I can go because I was doing shows back then. Uh-huh. And so I'm around kids that are in eighth grade and they're like, who is this fourth grader just going around saying like, oh yeah, well like you. And like,
cause you feel tough important.
It wasn't tough or important. It was the attention I got from them because they'd laugh and be like, you're so young, and I'd be like, you're giving me attention.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
So my parents, mom swears like a sailor, dad doesn't swear much, and I'm one of those families that they thought it was funny for me to swear.
Oh boy.
And it started with my grandmother, who's rest in peace or something. I don't know. She wasn't a very nice lady.
But still, let's wish peace for her.
Exactly. Sure. So in the car, I remember, when I was really little, before she brought me home to my parents, she taught me when a car drives by, like one of the honey bucket things that sucks the S word out. Of a...
What's a honey bucket?
A sewer?
A honey bucket is one of those, like, at the festivals, like, they have the bathrooms there.
Oh, I see. The porta potties?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
And so when we drive by in the car, she'd be like, look, honey, there's an S sucker.
Oh, boy. A poop sucker. You can say poop.
Poop sucker.
Yep,
with the
wrong
word.
Poop sucker. There we go. Yep. And so and she would laugh, and then I would laugh, and then I went home to mom and dad and would scream it at the top of my lungs, and
no
they laughed,
way.
And they were like, that's bad,
but it's
keep
funny.
Keep doing it.
Oh, no.
So I was that kid. Yeah.
Do
little
you know
potty
joke
mouth.
That works.
At also my Christian private school, so.
Oh.
Yeah. James, not too much around adults.
Well, James, and someone said you said Mount Carmel was where you went.
I went to St. Lawrence.
St. Lawrence. I don't know if you had wanted to. Is that still open?
It is. It is. It's co-ed now, though.
Oh, how weird is that?
I know. Yeah. It seems better.
312-981-7200. We're getting some texts about swearing and whether or not... Because there's a psychologist who thinks that it's okay to swear in front of your kids. He's not saying you should.
Right. Like, go out of your way.
Right. You shouldn't go out of your way. I think that there's, you know, there's sort of a... I don't know. An unpacking you can do if you want to at least not make your... I was confused growing up, and I was like, you... Michael, I swore way too much before I should have. So we'll
love
take your texts.
Love you, listening.
My mom too. She doesn't swear anymore. One time I was in the car and I cussed, and she goes, "I don't appreciate when people swear." I'm like, "You're the one that taught me." More after this. A psychologist says you can swear in front of your kids. It's not too big of a deal as long as you're not being verbally abusive. As long as you're not swearing at them. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining me is comedian James Vickery and Danny, how do I say your last name?
Crable.
Danny Crable's in studio with us. We have Michael Silver. They are performing this Saturday with the Comedy Dance Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
The Comedy Dance Chicago.
We used to be Collective, and that's why it's confusing, because that's now our LLC, and so our LLC is Comedy Dance Collective. Now the show that we're posting around Chicago is Comedy Dance Chicago.
And they are part of Sketchfest, which opens this Thursday. They're performing on Saturday night. You can go to stage773.com for the lineup, the ticket information, the address, which is over there on Belmont. What's the address, Michael?
1225 West Belmont, right there.
Right over there, by Folsom's Fish Market.
Too. Yes.
Great place to
delicious.
Eat.
It is a great space.
And I love the theater. The 301 says that Sketchfest sounds like a lot of fun. They also say that the kids seem to have a knack for picking up the very words you wish they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely is the case. And the 312 says, my mom put liquid soap in my mouth for saying the F word in 1987. Mm. The soap was a good punishment for me because it worked. My older brother started watching Andrew Dice Clay, and everything was F this and F that.
We had the same. My mom would put bars of soap, and we would
bars
she would like it would yeah like
I got the bar of soap.
Yeah,
you guys
scrape
get
off
the
on
bars?
Your teeth.
Christmas
it's gross.
I did not.
I didn't know. I did, we Me did not neither. Have the bars of soap. No, not at all. How often were you having your mouth washed out, Tom?
Oh, jeez. quite a bit. I had a penchant for swearing. I really thought it was fun.
But you said that everybody in your family was kind of using the words nonchalantly. So it was
kind of like do as I say, not as I do sort of deal. Because we, you know, whenever I said a curse word, I'd usually get a bar of soap. Or if it was a really bad one, my grandma would give me the wooden spoon.
Ooh, yep.
Oh, that was
we got
really
the belt.
Fun. The belt?
Very similar. We had belt very down. Similar upbringings as far as cuss words. And my mom would do it if I cussed at her or like one of my siblings, because it was then in a heated way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If I cursed at one of my like friends, they kind of let it go.
It sounds like if you have siblings, that might make a difference, too. The 815 says, my brother's 4 years older than me and thought it was funny to teach his 11 years younger brother to flip the bird. It did not go over well when the younger brother started kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see that. That's not sign language. That's not appropriate. The ASL does not teach that as the symbol for the bird. So I know that in my family, it was confusing for me. Like what, you know, I honestly, I don't think I ever heard my dad really ever swear. Maybe a little bit when I was like maybe in my 20s, you know. But my mom, she was colorful. Well, and she also learned English as a second language, so I don't think the words meant as much to
her. I was going
to
ask, did she swear in English or Spanish mostly?
I'm not allowed to swear in Spanish.
Ooh.
Right,
see?
Because
that means more.
It means more, carries more weight.
When I learned Spanish, kids would say swear words in our Spanish classroom because it didn't mean anything to them. But then they'd get sent to the principal's office because we had a Cuban teacher, one from Cuba.
Oh.
That makes a difference. Yeah. Now, I don't know if people are going to be swearing about this. There are, you know, so many different... I'm going to change topics real quick because I didn't realize we were going to talk about the shutdown. But, you know, one of the industries, there's so many different groups that are going to be affected by this as this continues. But there are so many craft breweries around the country. Anyone who's trying to come out with a new beer will not be able to do so until after the shutdown ends. No beers. New beers are on hold during government shutdown. So the because among the non-essential employees during this shutdown, they'll be on hiatus. And those are the people from the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, which approves most new beer labels.
Mm.
So I'm from Seattle, and I'm sure there are a lot of boys with beards in plaid flannels crying right now.
Yep. Waiting around.
That they can't get their IPA out tomorrow.
At me next time. At me next time, man.
So, and this isn't going to, I don't think that individuals are going to notice. I mean, you're still going to get all your regular beers that have been out there. But anyone who's trying to get something new to market.
The next best thing out there, yeah.
Yeah. So no new labels can be approved. Any beer with an existing label, basically any and all the beers you already drink will be able to go to the market. But it makes you think, like, there are some companies that are going to feel this little by little, but we will never quite know the full measure of how people are impacted, especially since today, I believe, was the first day that some people didn't receive their paychecks.
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although the government has announced, the president has announced that they will be funding food stamps. They don't have any funding past March. If you are filing for your tax returns and you expect a refund, they will be making sure that that goes through. So
how?
So they, huh?
How?
They're probably going to make sure that those offices.
So Congress will pass a thing that says, oh, the president said he'll sign this one because it only has these offices.
Well, because I think that once you start to impact people this way, yeah. Once it starts to grow, because I don't know about you guys, but I consider my tax refund to be my bonus for the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's
it's already in my budget. Like in my budget, not in my vacation funds.
No, it's paying off debts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're like, okay.
Go straight to my credit card.
Do you file early so that you can have that?
Or? Usually I do. Yeah. I do. And I was told by someone today, I was talking at work to someone who used to always file early. And then he was like, but now I pay every year. So now I wait till April or whatever. But I always file early.
Wow. Do you file early? I wait until
No, I'm late.
You're late? Not past April 15th.
Not past. Right. Oh my God, I'm not a monster. I just want to be sure. Bush Light is going to be okay, right?
Bush Light is just, okay. You're going to be fine. They're not adding any flavors.
I mean, we could always just go back to bathtub gin. That kind of worked out pretty well.
God, my bathtub has never been clean enough for me to feel good about the idea of making my own moonshine.
But that gives it the flavor, you know? That's what really gives you the blindness after a few cups.
I was going to say, that gin will clean it right up. That'll make it nice and...
That'll take care of your sinuses.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Actually, now you grew up in Florida.
Yeah.
Which obviously prone to hurricanes. Did you ever have to hide in your bathroom? Like
we never went to the. We may have gone to the bathroom once or twice.
Isn't it like in your tub?
They say that it's in your tub. Mm. I don't know if there's a good reason for that, but they do say sit in the tub. But I mean, we just waited them out together. We did go in a closet. We had a big closet by the bathroom, so we did that. Wow. That was further in the house, but yeah, we went through some bad ones. When I was in high school, we had every third letter, Charlie, Francis, Ivan, come through. And
wow.
Oh, I remember that. And then we had to like cancel homecoming. We lost 2 weeks of school. The army came in with rations for everybody. So we went through some crazy ones. And I'm on the coast, so the storm surge would knock everything down.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I like a good storm.
Right. Yeah, some wind, maybe some trees bending from the gutterama.
Like from a sound machine.
Yeah.
That's the best kind of storm.
Yeah.
Actually, that's funny because Tom gave me a list of phobias, and I wonder if anybody has a phobia. Let's see. There is actually, this is by state, phobias by state.
Cool. Hmm.
So Connecticut actually is where they have the fear of thunder most likely. I guess
don't move to Florida then.
Yeah. This is their top fear in Connecticut is thunder.
What?
It makes sense. It can be, some people are sound sensitive.
What's Florida? Like weird deaths?
This is okay.
Oh, no.
This makes
we love those.
This makes no sense. Did you see this one, Tom, on the list?
Just
a fear of sleep.
What?
Well, because if you think about it. About Florida.
Oh, that's Florida?
It's Florida. The fear of sleep.
Why?
It's a fear or aversion to falling asleep at night. Maybe they think they're going to miss something.
Florida got some FOMO.
There's so much happening.
I mean, we go out a lot at night, Michael. I think
that is some severe FOMO.
That's severe FOMO. Yeah. That's a double F. Florida fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from originally?
Seattle.
From Seattle.
Yeah, Washington State.
The top fear in Seattle is... They're not on the list.
Oh, cool.
Unless fearless.
They fear nothing.
Seattle, you are fearless.
Fear nothing. We're so just sad all the time.
It's alphabetical, right? They've got to be on the list. I find it hard to believe.
They're just sad all the
looking
time.
Looking for Washington?
Yeah, I got Washington. Oh
yeah, Washington State.
Duh.
Yeah,
I am. I'm so tired.
Should have.
Thank you, everybody. In Seattle, Washington. God, I need a nap. Everybody, let me take a break, and I'll tell you what your phobia is. More in a moment on 720 WGN
podcasts.
Podcasts everywhere. Podcasts.
huge collection of topics all in one place, all with one search.
What's going on with WGN Plus?
Resolutions. No one ever does the old get more workouts in, eat better, get off the couch. Baloney. We need some good ones, like single, married, divorced making relationship resolutions, and NoCo Cinema vowing to make the cinematic arts better in every way they know how. Yeah, that feels better. All right, now let's look them up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
Well, Danny, your home state shares the phobia with another state. Rhode Island and Washington both fear spiders.
Oh, that checks out. Brown recluse in Washington, you're going to die.
Oh.
It's like, so scary.
There's a lot of fear right
I mean,
there.
I'm fine.
You're trying to think about it.
Totally.
Don't think about spiders.
Okay, so listen. So I moved to...
I'm going to find about your spider story when we come back.
Okay.
We're going to go to the news, and we're going to be on hold for the spider story.
It's going to be good.
I don't know if this is going to keep people... It'll be a funny spider story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sketchfest this week and next week. Go to stage773.com. We're about to hear the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And if you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 312-981-7200. Again, the number is 312-981-7200.
See, Bitsy Spider went up the spout again.
There are, in the United States, there's the top searched phobias by state, and in 11 states, fear of spiders ranks number one as a phobia, which includes Washington and Rhode Island. I'll have to go through the list and see how many other. Now, see, bugs is not the same thing. That seems like a general category.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And in Washington growing up, you mentioned a type of spider that seemed to give you the whims.
The brown recluse is one that supposedly they're skittish, but they're just like these big brown spiders. And if they bite you, your arm falls off or something. Actually, I don't know what really happens. That's just what I've made up in my mind.
Are you talking about the wolf spider? Those are huge.
No, it's
I know the brown recluse. I know that one. We have those in Florida. And they're supposed to like hide in dark, wet spots.
This is more of an emotional spider.
Of course they do, and there's lots of dark, wet spots in Washington.
So you were going to tell us about a specific...
Well, so I moved here a year and a half ago. And yeah, mine does range from like spiders and insects and... Come here. So there's 2 hours time difference in Washington State from Illinois, and called my dad up 1 a.m. here. It is not 1 a.m. there. It's 3 a.m.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, is it? I don't know. Wait, is that right?
No, it's opposite.
No, it's
so be 11 p.m.
Okay, no, then it had to be 3. I know there was 3 a.m. somewhere.
So you called him at 5 in the morning from here.
I don't know.
It's okay.
It was really late, and there was one of those millipede things. Mm-hmm. You know, they're
fuzzy.
Here with the things, with the things.
Antennas.
You can't see what I'm doing, but yeah, antennas, you can imagine what I'm doing with my hands. Anyways.
They're creepy crawling.
Those are the most horrifying things I've ever seen.
They're
called my
disgusting.
Dad, and I'm like, I don't know what this is, Dad.
Did you send him a picture of it?
Yeah. He was like, that's creepy looking. I'm like, Dad, you will stay on the phone with me. And every time I turned around, I like couldn't find it. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to die tonight. This is the end of everything. Those things are so big.
It's hard to fall asleep. Once you wake up, or if you're in bed and anything goes crawl, I mean,
oh my God.
Yeah, no.
You got to find it.
I have to burn my bed. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
The whole building.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to move out right now.
Yeah.
I'm coming home, Dad.
Time to go. Do you want to know the silliest one I saw on this list? Tom, did you get a chance to look through the whole list of phobias?
No, I was focused on the spider one.
In California, the most searched phobia. Fear of success.
Mm. Okay,
oh, my
California.
God. I can relate to that.
See, this is why California needs to fall off of the country. Just
don't want to be followed around by paparazzi.
Is that your sense living now in California,
absolutely.
James?
Like, I just don't want to get too big.
Don't want to shave your head.
I could be covered in spiders.
There's good news for folks.
Be famous.
The folks in Arizona, it's good that they have a lot of space and lots of desert because they have a fear of people.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm just gonna go
all
build
of them.
Wait, did you say Illinois? Did I miss it?
No, I haven't said Illinois. What do you think Illinois is? Oh, the opposite. than Arizona. We're afraid of being alone.
Oh, yeah. So true.
That's kind of sweet.
That's fun. I thought I was going to say sad. You said sweet, and I had to change my word.
That's
I was
sweet.
Like,
no, well, that maybe that's why
sad and sweet.
You know, people tune into the show.
Yeah, yeah, like thank you for listening. Yeah. We're here for you.
Now I feel like I shouldn't have it. I shouldn't be so loud. You know, make sure that people feel soothed, and maybe make sure we tailor because you're not alone. I think that's important for anybody is to know that you're not alone.
And I think that's why I have 6 dating apps. I do.
Aw, by the way, the 312 says that that bug in your bed was a silverfish.
That's what I was going to say. I think it is.
Silverfish.
Well, I don't care what they are. They're awful looking.
Yep, they're horrifying.
I'm sorry. They're terrible.
I this list is fascinating to me. People in Kansas are afraid of love.
Mm. Oh, come on, Kansas.
It's okay. Give us a hug, love.
Yeah.
Open up.
Kansas.
Do they have the technical names for these phobias?
They do, actually. Ooh. The fear of... I wasn't going to do all that because...
I'm just curious what love is.
A philophobia. Unreasonable fear of falling in love or emotional attachment.
You could use that on your apps.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's a lot in Chicago, too.
Well, we have the autophobia, which is a morbid fear of isolation or abandonment.
Mm. Autophobia. Oh.
Yeah. And then
it would be a fear of cars.
What was that?
I would have thought
say autophobia?
Auto. Maybe I'm not saying it right, but it's spelled like auto.
I think auto meaning self.
Self.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am afraid of myself.
Are you afraid of what? The fear of people would be anthropophobia.
Anthropophobia, yeah. Anthropophobia. Makes sense.
That would make sense.
I took that class in college, I think.
That would have been easier to do. A lot of fear of people. People in Mississippi are also afraid of people. Nebraska, afraid of people. Nevada, afraid of commitment.
Well, that makes sense. Las Vegas.
Yeah. New Jersey, afraid of driving, maybe around each other.
Oh, yeah.
You guys aren't very safe on the road. In New Mexico, they're afraid of the dark, which would be nyctophobia, depending
probably
on how
you... Probably.
A lot of spiders. Oklahoma, Rhode Island. There's just a lot of people afraid. A lot of people afraid of people. Also in New York, New Jersey, both afraid of driving. Vehophobia.
Vehophobia.
Well, I thought common, you know, knowledge was like people are more afraid of public speaking than like death.
Yeah.
That's always like
it is nowhere to be found.
That is strange.
In Texas, where everything is big. Apparently, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh at Texas. It's okay. We're all here for you. They're afraid of everything.
Everything?
Everything. Panophobia. Generalized lingering fear that something bad is about to happen.
Well, that explains the guns.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Oh. Always got to prepare. Get that firearm. Mm.
By the way, the 312 hates ants, which would probably go under bugs. Yes? That would go under bugs.
I think some kind of bug. Like, maybe they're defined by the number of legs. Six. Eight.
Silverfish make me think of that scene from Star Trek 2 with the insect in the ears. Me too. Yeah. I'm always afraid they're going to crawl into my ear. Plus, I heard a horrible story in college about something crawling into someone's ear and it couldn't crawl back out because they can't go backwards.
We should stop or I'm going to throw up.
I'm surprised Florida's not like either spiders or reptiles. We've got big old spiders down there.
You know what? Maybe that's why you're afraid to go to sleep. You're afraid that spiders and reptiles
too much.
Will crawl all over you. Yeah, New Hampshire, also afraid of spiders. We also have, there's a lot of fear, but do you want to know the one state that apparently is afraid of nothing? No biggest fear. They're not Googling fear or phobias.
Alaska.
No, they're afraid of needles.
Mm. Hawaii.
Oh,
they
my
just
gosh.
Love life.
I am from Alaska, and that is my true worst fear.
Needles? Really?
Needles.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's it. I just passed out yesterday at the doctor's office. What up?
Trypanophobia. Abnormal fear of injections, blood draws, and needles.
Yep. That's wow. That's cool.
There you go. So it's not Hawaii.
Cool is a strong word.
Hawaii is also spiders.
Come on.
No, I'm fascinated.
I think I know what it is.
What state has no fear whatsoever?
Oh, it's Wyoming.
It's Wyoming.
Yeah.
Wyoming, afraid of nothing.
Because there is nothing.
Because they have bison.
They have
bison.
Protecting
of course.
Everything.
Yeah.
And those bison have guns.
Yes.
Yeah. Spiders, bison, got it.
Now, you know what? I teased a story earlier, and I've got to get to it, and then we got to make sure we talk to James about a recent adventure he had helping somebody move. But we're going to talk about a security camera that caught a prowler doing something to a doorbell for 3 hours. More after this on 720 WGN. Find out what it is. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, overlooking the beautiful city of Chicago. We can see the river from here. It's a pretty view. I like this view. And you can see, we are a little bit closer to those apartments. Those are now apartments across the street, James.
Oh, I see.
Don't look too closely.
I'll be staring at this the rest of the night.
Don't look too closely. James Vickery joins us in studio, comedian James Vickery. Visiting, he lives, he's originally from Chicago, has now moved to California to follow his lovely bride, Kristen McAllister, who hopefully will join us before she leaves town soon.
I think so.
Do you have any shows while you're in town?
I did a stop by Zany's tonight.
Oh, wonderful.
In hometown.
Excellent. Yeah. I love
that. But I'm just visiting with my family here. Yeah. Taking in Chicago.
And you, when you leave, by the way, it's been so nice while you've been here. The weather has been
fun. Oh, my
fun.
God.
You've been
Except
so lucky.
It's like changing like
as we're here.
Right now.
Yeah. It's going to be very
and
cold.
And I did not dress for it.
It will feel like six before you leave. Mm. So you know.
I love it.
Danny joins us in studio. She's a part of the Comedy Dance Chicago, incredible dance group. They're going to be performing at Stage 773 as part of Sketchfest, and Michael, who joins us as well. We were talking a little bit about phobias, and I think I have a new one that wasn't even possible before, because prowler, by the way, Andrea Darlis was talking about how you can now get these, you know, when if you're worried about people, you know, ringing your doorbell, trying to, you know, get into your house, you know, pull a scam. She was talking about those cameras now you can have as your doorbell. So you can have it connected to your phone and you can see who's on your front porch. I don't know if I would want this to be caught on video. A family in Salinas, California might be ready to deliver a tongue lashing to the prowler. Their security camera caught licking their doorbell for 3 hours. He was licking their doorbell for 3 hours. I mean, I don't even know if that's something where you've maybe ingested too much of a certain type.
I literally can't do anything for 3 hours.
No, that's commitment.
Yeah.
I'm
just so flabbergasted.
Mm-hmm. Their security system alerted the family to strange movement in the early morning, which means he had been there for a while.
In the early morning?
Well, they woke up in the morning.
After 2 hours, it kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours of licking.
My son doesn't get home till 6, so I was wondering who was on my front porch. Who the heck is that? She was even more shocked when she watched the videos. Hours of a male trespasser just licking her doorbell.
No.
That is, I'm not sure what, I mean, still, there's the charge of trespassing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my husband, I sent this to my husband, and he goes, is it made of sponge sugar? What could that possibly be on the doorbell?
It makes me think of that wall of, like, in the wallpaper in Willy Wonka, and the they just start, like, I'm like, what was on like that doorbell?
Well, and why that doorbell?
How
do you know it's going to be that doorbell? Do you lick other doorbells first, and this becomes the doorbell that you become attached to?
This couldn't have been the first.
Agreeing. This cannot be the first instance that this person has licked a doorbell for multiple hours.
Yeah, and by the way, they were also caught urinating on the front because you got to take a break at some point. Yeah. You can't just lick the doorbell for 3 hours.
Of course.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't... James is trying.
I'm so grossed out by all of it.
The 312 says to each his own. He's a doorbell licker. Don't be a hater. to each their own.
All the doorbells you want to lick, but don't go licking my doorbell.
After using a doorbell. You know what I mean? Like, just any sort of...
Now that's my phobia. Touching doorbells.
By the way, the suspect...
And needles.
The suspect could face misdemeanor charges for petty theft and prowling. I'm not sure what he stole. You have to replace.
Innocence is what he stole.
Yeah, doorbells, innocence. His own dignity.
And I figure you have to replace that doorbell.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
I'd want to.
You've made that doorbell unusable. That is a strange thing. He could face misdemeanor charges for petty theft and prowling. As of Tuesday, he is still at large.
Where's the state? Where was this?
This is in California.
Oh, I was expecting Florida.
Yeah.
California. I really was.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Gee, that must have been one tasty doorbell. We really have no answer to that. Mm. But I'm glad that it was a security camera and that it wasn't
the doorbell.
The doorbell itself, where you know that's a close up. There was fortunately no physical damage to the home, but they did spend the rest of the weekend sanitizing the doorbell. You got to take that off. You get a different doorbell.
Who even uses a doorbell anymore?
But people use a doorbell, especially.
See, I just stand out on the porch real awkward and just text them here until they come get me.
Right.
I don't use a doorbell.
Well, anybody who wants
a little.
Huh?
It's like voicemail. It's like no one's really doing that anymore.
I do. I leave voicemail.
Do you really?
I'm sorry. Oh. You know I do. I've tried calling you before.
Oh, you do? And I'm like, hey, I missed your call.
Well, because usually when I'm driving, I try to do voice to text, but it never turns out the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
It's never what I meant to say. Yeah. I don't answer the doorbell very often, and I like to. I like to know who's out there. My husband hates that I want to answer the door. In particular, during the political season, during the elections, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people trying to get signatures to get on the ballot.
It's happening now. Leading up to the Chicago elections.
They should already be done.
For the ballots, but they're continuing to ring so that their names are, yes, for aldermen.
And for contesting their signatures as well.
Yeah.
Oh. Yep.
And mostly just to make sure their name is out there. They're already on the ballot, but to make sure that people know to vote for them.
Right.
So they're still going around.
To keep having the conversation.
Yep.
And that's why I like answering the door. My husband does not.
Oh.
Yeah. One of the neighbors rang my doorbell, and I went down there, and they were, going door to door for one of the alderman races. And I said, well, okay, great. What's their platform? And they said, well, just that they're not the person that's in the office now. And I was like, oh, this needs a little more prep work.
Yeah,
let's work
come
on
this
in,
pitch. Come on in. Yeah,
let's work on your pitch. Tell me more about
someone's son that they just are making go door to door. He doesn't actually. He's different.
Well, that's why I wanted to help them out by asking some questions. Let's work this through. We can build this. Let's develop the story you want to tell for your candidate. Now, James, you're a good friend. Speaking of this neighbor of mine, who's obviously a friend with this candidate and willing to go door to door, you went an extra few miles for your friend. I don't know that I could do this. What did you do?
Just recently, my neighbor here in Chicago, I do live in Los Angeles, but my neighbor, I have a small condo here in Chicago on the southwest side, very close to Midway Airport. And there's a man there, Jim, who had the house next door. Awesome neighbor. Like, has this amazing garden. So, like, in summer, he would give us, cucumbers, tomatoes, onions, potatoes from his yard, lettuce. Great fisherman.
Aww.
He would catch this lake perch, which you cannot commercially catch in Lake Michigan, so it was a real treat. And he'd fry it up, he'd like prepare it and fry it up. Just amazing neighbor. Like, while I was traveling, he would get my mail. And he just recently sold his house and was moving in with his brother in Florida. Never married, no kids. And so I offered up to drive with him from Chicago in a U-Haul with the stuff to Florida recently. So we took this road trip.
That's aggressive. That's it aggressively kind.
Where in Florida?
Palm Coast. It's a little bit by Daytona Beach.
Yeah, I used to live in Palm Bay. Oh, Palm Coast. Yeah, Flagler, Palm Coast. That's where I'm from. That
really?
Area. Daytona Beach, Ormond Beach, Palm Coast.
Oh my gosh.
I'm from Daytona.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's not the
north side. I just flew out of that airport.
So how long of a drive is this?
It was like total, like 17 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
We made a trip out of it. First night we slept in Nashville. He'd never been to Nashville.
I love
Nashville. I do too. And he'd never been. I kept him out. This man is 75 years old. Aww. We stayed out till 2:30 in the morning.
This is great. What a great thing you did, James.
Oh, thank you. It was really fun. It was by the end. I had time to reflect at the Daytona Beach airport.
Yeah.
When he dropped me off, then I was flying back to California. I'm there by myself at this little airport looking out at the sunset.
Is it one of those ones where they have to push the planes out onto the...
Basically.
Some of them, I've had to get out on the tarmac in a storm and like not on the thing. You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah. Some of those planes are tiny. Yeah.
It's so small. And I'm sitting there kind of reflecting on this whole drive and everything. And I was like, it was really for me.
Oh,
it really was like the stories I got from it and just that feeling. And I was so glad to do it.
What were some of the stories that like things that surprised you about your friend?
Well, because we knew each other, but we didn't really like sit there, sit in the car and like talk
for 17 hours
for that long.
Right. 17 hours.
Yeah. It was he's a true throwback. Never had a credit card. Still does not have a credit card.
Never had a credit card.
Nope.
Smart.
Just like as basic as can be. And as I was talking to him and being with him, I realized like, there's a certain like peace of mind that comes with that type of way of living.
Okay.
You know, like I just like he says whenever he says he's not a man who talks a lot, but when he says it, he means it. You know, everything was like for a reason.
Okay.
And it was great. It was a great perspective to get.
It's great to be able to take stock in things, too.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, how long does it take for you to warm up to somebody? I mean, it's one thing to know them and be friends with them, be friendly.
Right.
But to warm up to a conversation for a 17-hour haul.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was also like a reminder. And one thing I love about Chicago, that the whole idea of neighbors.
Yeah.
And how powerful that relationship could be. Because you're like, you look out for each other. Like, you know, like we live by each other.
I like my neighbors. I don't know that I would help them move with a 17-hour drive.
I feel like this is so up my alley. Like, I want to make a small business of it. Like, I will help drive people down to Florida, like old people.
Well, not just not just Florida. You can, I mean, there's plenty. And Arizona. Not just older people.
Does that make you like the Grim Reaper?
No.
Of River Sticks? Like,
No. How would you market that? I'll be your companion.
I'll be your companion
for your travel trip partner. Mm-hmm. I will ride co-pilot. Did you drive or did he do all the
driving? I did a lot of the driving.
Okay.
Especially after I kept him out real late the next morning after Nashville, he's like, I can't drive. I'm too hungover. I'm like, all right, I got it.
Awesome.
That is great. Yeah,
went to Savannah, Georgia.
How do we market this? How do we get this as a service for folks?
Anyone out there, if you're moving, I will drive with you.
Or not even just moving, maybe somebody who needs to visit a relative, but they don't want to fly, mm-hmm. and they don't want to drive a long distance by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Which can be hard.
Right?
Absolutely.
But how would you charge for this? Like, is it per hour? Is it per state?
$100,000.
Well, that's a lot. Yeah, I think we're going to have a tough time marketing this, Chase.
I will say... And he paid for my flight back.
Okay.
He was so thankful that I was doing this for him. The one thing he insisted on was like that I didn't pay for anything. So
right. Well, I would imagine, but he didn't pay you for a feed for the whole thing. Just
no, not a
fee. You gave of your own time.
It was yes.
You might have to find another business plan.
Yeah,
for this
model. No, yeah. Think about it.
I'm thinking that this might have a short life. As far as I mean, unless yeah, I mean, I don't know what your resources are like. Maybe
that's a good point.
Yeah.
No.
Or maybe this is like a philanthropic thing that somebody could help fund, right? Where I don't know,
not for profit. Yeah.
Whatever makes me rich, however it happens.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
It's not gonna do this.
This is going to have to strictly be a just out of love.
I mean, yep. Did you hear about the guy? Maybe check out the Groupon Living Social guy. Went to them and brought in the homeless experience, where literally you would live with like in it was in Chicago too. They had it here. You'd go and live like with homeless people for a night or maybe two nights.
See, if the goal was to have you learn empathy and right. be able to have a better understanding and then want to help and make a commitment to homeless people, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But if it's just like for the
this was monetized.
Vicarious thrill, yeah.
It was
oh,
yeah.
Man.
I'm not sure about
indoor
that.
Indoor skydiving? Is that the way to put it? Oh, no.
That's better. More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you, 316. I really like you. 312-981-7200 to join our conversation anytime. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Joining me are Michael and Danny, and I say Michael Silver. I know your last name. Danny, remind me one more time your last name.
Crable.
I'm going to write it down now so that I don't forget. Danny Crable, and I'll have you get on again so that it becomes second nature.
Yay!
Danny Crable from Seattle, Washington, originally.
Yeah, well, I was born in Alaska.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But from Seattle.
Unfortunately, mm-hmm. and then you do fit in with their phobias in Alaska. With
exactly.
Needles.
I fit in with both. Yes.
And the phobia of spiders.
Speaks to me.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Michael Silver, originally from Florida.
Yeah.
Now a resident of Chicago. Also, Danny, I didn't get a chance to ask you, like, what did you set out in life to do? Did you want to become a comic or a performer, an artist, and a writer?
Yeah, I started doing theater when I was 8, doing primarily musical theater, and then transitioning into college, doing a lot of Shakespeare, uh-huh. and then moved to Chicago, a year and a half ago after I got my BFA in college in theater. And they just wanted me to play so many dramatic roles. I was like, why? No, let me be funny. So, yeah, coming here has been a dream and just, like, feel like I've met my people. Like this one right next to me, Michael Aww. Silver.
And
a dream.
Michael and Danny are appearing at Sketchfest.
Yes.
Opening this Thursday. Their performance is on Saturday, January 12th.
Yep, January 12th.
At 9 p.m. You can go to Stage 773. It's the Comedy Dance Chicago. Mm-hmm. They're an incredible group. It's so funny, dynamic, energetic. Not only will you not be sorry, you'll be thrilled. You'll be, like, calling
so
me up
fun.
And thanking me for sending you to Sketchfest in Stage 773. And I want to ask you before you hold on a second. We have a listener who wants to join our conversation. Hey, Matthew, what do you prefer to go by?
What can you say, Patty? What can you say?
Hey, Matt. Sounds like you're having a good... Now, you weren't licking a doorbell, were you, Matthew?
Oh, God, no. Hey, if it's a ring, it's not my ding-a-ling thing. You know what you say is what you say. That's all I'm saying. Hey, by the way, Sketchfest, go.
Oh, that's a good endorsement right there, hey. Michael.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Now, Matt, are you originally from Texas?
I am from Texas Arcana. I'm actually from Austin. Austin has good golf. We have good weather. We have anything together. It's all good.
Now, I don't know if you heard us earlier, we were reading the list of the top phobias from every state, and what we found was that in Texas, there's a fear of everything, and we wonder why if that's the reason for so many guns in Texas.
Oh, God, yeah. You fear everything, but I hate flying. If you fly with a gun, that's double damage.
No doubt about it. What are you up to tonight, Matt?
I'm just hanging out in the John Hancock.
In the John Hancock? I don't know do they know that you're up there? I think that the restaurant's closed.
Oh, it's open for Matt.
Open for Matt. Well, thanks for checking in with us, Matt. You have a great night, okay?
Absolutely.
Take care now.
Shamalama ding dong.
Now, every once in a while, we get some, you never know who's listening.
That's amazing.
So cool.
He's right around the corner. He's not far.
Not far at all. We should have told him to come in the studio. I was wondering, Danny, when you moved to Chicago, mm-hmm. Did you leave a lot of stuff back in Seattle, or did you bring everything?
Yeah, well, here was the plan. I was planning on just being here for a month and a half, or no, just a month, uh-huh. The month of June, a year and a half ago, last summer. Just brought some clothes, some of my favorite books, my bedding, mm-hmm. and then halfway through that month, called mom and dad, was like, I'm not gonna come home. Sorry. So
and
went
here you
very
are.
Quickly from there. And yeah, I've only gone home to pick up a couple of things. Yeah.
Now, are you living more minimally than you did when you were back in Seattle since you didn't bring everything with you?
I mean, well, I'm on the radio, so I guess I could tell you some fun personal information. Bought a house with my ex over there, so I had like a... You know, was doing the full have that a life. That was the plan, was to settle down over there. We broke up, and then everything just kind of fell into place. So yeah, it was had to do a purge of lots of belongings.
I have never purged well. I've lived with my husband. We've been married now for almost 19 years, and together for almost 24 years. Mm-hmm. So we've accumulated a lot of things, including children. I mean, we didn't accumulate, but along the way,
19 right now.
Yeah, a lot of different things. So I have a lot, and we have not purged in a long time. And so one of my friends recommended that I watch the show Marie Kondo. Mm-hmm. Kondi? Mm-hmm.
What's Marie Kondo?
Marie Kondo. It's a mm-hmm. and there's a series on Netflix, and it's the joy of tidying up. And it's my friend Elliot Serrano recommended that I watch this series on Netflix. I'm like, what are you trying to say? Mm-hmm. It's part of our binge and uncork. We watch a series every week. We binge on something, and then our winemaker from Dannenberger Family Vineyards pairs something with it. So I started watching. Now, James, you've seen the first episode.
Yeah, I have.
So I started watching it. I've known a little bit about the elements of her theory.
Me too, yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. and that if something brings you joy, keep it. If it doesn't, you know, find a way to set it to say goodbye to it. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that bothered me in the first episode, first there was a montage of, you know, her going through helping you see some of the families she's going to help throughout the series, and at one point she's like telling them they have to get rid of all these books, and I screamed because I don't agree with that. I mean, I know that there comes a point where maybe you have too many books, but I don't see my... Now, Tom, do you have a lot of books? Are you someone that... Because I get the sense that you collect a lot of books.
I'm a collector of many things. I have a ton of books, and sometimes I have to ask myself, like, realistically, am I ever going to read some of these again? And would they be better served in the hands of someone... I guess to use a phrase, less fortunate than I, that might not be able to get, you know, have quite as much access to books as I do. So maybe if I donated them,
you, the I'd feel king a little of bit, books.
I am giving the bookless peasants of this world copies of On the Road and other things that white males read in their 20s.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, like, Michael, are you someone that keeps a lot of books?
No, I have a selection of books.
Well, you're a physicist.
Yeah.
So like all those, like, nerdy books.
No, I have a few books that I have around, but that's because they're meaningful to me, and, like, I inherited. And right. I have a fascination with old books. So, like, I have some stuff from the World's Fair and some stuff older than that.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
love it. And, like, but I don't have a ton of books. I probably have more video games. I have a lot of video games laying around.
Oh, we'll see. And now that you could probably pare some of that down, don't you?
Oh, 100%. I've already beat most of it. Like, I should start selling them or just giving them away at this point. Some of them are probably, you can't even sell them
what
anymore.
What system do you have games on?
PlayStation 3 and 4 and the Switch.
Okay.
Oh, a lot. Oh, yeah. And okay, we also have a bunch of retro games we just found. Super Nintendo. I mean, like, we do definitely need to make a purge there.
I don't even know what the Switch is.
I don't know.
It's pretty cool. I just got it.
Now, James, when you moved to Los Angeles, do you have a lot of books, and did you bring them with you to L.A.?
Do you have a lot of books? Kept a lot in Chicago. I was a fiction writing major in college. That's what my degree is in, so I have a lot of books.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And hard to part with.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of book lovers would scream like I did when I saw. I mean, my husband's always telling me to get rid of my books. Like, we have bags and bags of books that we're supposed to, and boxes of books that I'm supposed to donate. And he's like, when are you going to get rid of these? And I'm like, but. And every time I walk by, I find another book that I'm like, oh no.
So, yes.
I can't let this one go.
That was one of her categories. It was one of her main categories to address were books.
Oh, yeah. That's one of her biggest categories.
I was like, I had a problem.
That was, that was the first part where I was out. But here, David has some thoughts on paring down books. Hey, David, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I have one bookcase, because my bookcase is totally full if I cannot get another book unless I get rid of a book. If I have not read a book within 2 years, that's when I get rid of it.
Okay.
That's fair practice.
I think that's fair. And if there's something that you want to go back to, you can always go find it.
Right.
Don't you think, David? Like, if right?
You know? Well, my books are out of print.
Oh, no.
But I still have to donate it if I haven't read it within 2 years.
That's a good policy. I like that one. Mm-hmm. And how do you know if you haven't read it in 2 years? Do you turn it around? That would be hard because then you can't find it again.
You know, after I read my books, I put it on the top shelf.
Okay.
If it stays up there on the top shelf, then I have to go through and empty my top shelf before I can buy any more books.
See, there you go. Contain
so
it.
Smart.
He's got to contain to one bookshelf.
I will
one
say
bookcase,
this. I mean, just recently reread a book that I hadn't read in several years, Jesus' Son by Dennis Johnson. And I found it artistically inspiring rereading
it. Going back and reading something.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Well, thank you for that tip, David. I like it.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
Have a great night, David. Well, so part of Marie Kondo's theory, her whole tidying up mantra is if it doesn't spark joy, you have to let it go. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing for me. It's like, and I don't just have books that bring me joy. I also have a lot of books I just haven't gotten to yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know.
And also, what if you never feel joy?
James.
Oh, I mean, that's not a thing.
Are you afraid of joy?
Yeah. What has LA done to you?
So, and you know, one of my favorite people on the planet is Bill Gorgo, and he has these writing groups sometimes for comics, and his entire basement is just lined with just shelves and shelves of books, and almost all of them are comedy, at least the room in the basement. And then upstairs, it's like everything, history and fiction, and it's like a little, and wow. He's like, if you want to borrow anything, help yourself. That kind of it's wonderful.
Wow.
I have a friend with an apartment in Chicago who he worked at a rare books and manuscripts section of an auction house, and he would find tons of books he wanted. And so you walk into his apartment, it's almost waist high of books stacked along the walls everywhere. It's super romantic. Like, you're like, this is amazing.
Right.
But holy cow, like, yeah. get the hoarder TV show in there, and they're going to have a
never move ever.
Yeah. You are in it now.
Yeah.
And then hopefully there's no cats underneath those piles.
Oh,
then.
No.
That's happened before on Hoarders. The other thing that bothered me about the series on Netflix, the Marie Kondo Joy of Tidying Up, was that first house they went in, they opened the door, and the place looks fine.
I thought that. It was like nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. I mean, there's like the kids' playroom. I didn't make it past the kids' playroom in that one closet that they had. That if you open like the curtain, there's a bunch of laundry in there. I was like, no. I can't. This is not rising to the level of these folks need help.
Yeah.
They just need better storage containers, and their kids need to pick stuff up. Did it get worse from there?
Not really. The garage. I had the same thought. And I like a lot of what she says. I like her basic premise of right. the idea of, like, if this doesn't bring you joy, why have it? But, yeah, that one felt a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I thought it was a weird way to start.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you go with a family that really, when you walk in, you're like, you guys need some help. Not, like, hoarders kind of help.
Yeah.
The idea is that these are folks that are just aren't organized. They've got to, you know, pull it together a little bit better. But they can't. The house looked great. I mean, I'm sitting there watching from my living room. I'm like, this is. You guys.
I know. There was someone like before and after. I was like, oh yeah, right. Oh, yeah, that's different.
I guess. So does the series get better?
That's the only episode I watched.
It's the only episode you watch, too. There's a, we actually have a big collection of these as well from the 847. My mom says I should sell my LP records. I replied, do you want to sell your journals? Wow.
Ooh.
See? I have tubs of journals. I have like two tubs.
I have a lot of journals.
Filled with journals.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I have a lot. I have journals.
Just donate them to the Goodwill.
You know what's funny though is I've lost like two comedy notebooks in my entire career, and I still wonder if that was like the jewel, like that was.
I lost one recently.
The Holy Grail, you know, it's like what did I put down in there?
Someone out there is about to be a millionaire.
There are some really good ideas in that book. Is there anything that you hold on to too much of, Michael?
Too much of? I've always lived kind of I'm not going to say I'm a minimalist by any stretch, but I don't put stuff on my walls. I kind of live with what I've needed most.
Like you're ready to leave? You're like, if I have to evacuate, I'm good to go.
I mean, a fleeing criminal kind of thing.
I don't know. I've never really held on to a ton of stuff. Like, I don't want the responsibility for animals. I don't know.
Posters, animals, nothing.
No, not really. And like the video games thing, that's not really me clinging. It's me being lazy. Like I'm just a little too lazy to get rid of them. Furniture, I'm just like, give me a couch. Great. Give me a bed. Great. So I don't know. I kind of also grew up where we didn't put value in a lot of material things, I think. And so I just never learned the value of new clothes that fit. And so I'm kind of learning that as like... At a later stage, like when I went to college, people were like, Mike, you got to get a new shirt. And I'm like, what? It's still a shirt. They're like, no.
Wow. The fact that your friends even notice, like, I mean,
yeah.
I don't really update too much.
Yeah. They notice, they said stuff living in Chicago. And so now I'm like learning, it is nice to have a picture on the wall. I'm only learning that in my early 30s.
That's okay.
Yeah. 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 But
you know what? I'm glad you've held on to, Mike.
Wow.
You know what I'm talking about. When you walk into Michael Silver's apartment,
what does he have? Tell us.
Him and his roommate have these two beautiful pictures sitting on the windowsill.
Fairly large photos.
Big pictures of them. They've both got the dusted tips, little bleach tips of their like these beautiful like beauty poses
portraits?
Of them. Yeah, these portraits of them in the high school choir.
Yeah, just
is
in
that
high
right?
school. That's just our high
and
school.
And their skin has been so photoshopped. It just looks
nice.
Like
the filter.
Beautiful yeah. angel skin. Mm. And they're my favorite things. Like
everyone brings them up.
Yeah,
everyone.
I want them so bad. I want to put them in my room.
I think everyone should have.
Yeah.
Do you have anything in your do you guys, have you guys like settled in? I mean, your place was nicely decorated.
It was pretty, yeah. And what was great about moving, and that's one thing you realize, like moving to LA, you're like, oh, because we kind of had nothing. And it's like, oh, you don't need a lot, you know, mm-hmm. like, and you could feel yourself adding more. But we're both a little like against that. Just, I love keeping it clean.
Yeah. I'm reluctant to add too much.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to. I just don't know where to start. I'm one of those people that has like a lot of things in the basement that I just like my books.
Like what's in there? Books.
Well, you know, things for the walls and different projects that I wanted to update the house with a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had kids. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to hear the stories and the news that matters from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Quick break. We'll come back with our conversation. Continues after this. Oh, tell me something good. 312-981-7200. Let me know what's making you happy tonight. What's making you smile? No matter what happens throughout the day, there's always something you can be grateful for. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Hello.
Come on, get happy.
Get happy.
Hey, everybody. We wind down our show tonight just before we turn it over to Nick DiGilio to find out what's making you happy tonight. What are you grateful for? 312-981-7200. Let us know. By the way, the 312's been asking all night, quick, who sang the bird, a bird, a bird, bird? What the bird's the word?
The trash man.
The what?
It's the trash man.
The trash man?
Yeah. The trash men.
Trash men.
Men, multiple
you,
trash men.
You know
men.
You have to help me through these musical moments.
Oh, I'm here for you.
So Tom Hush wins the Lou Malnati's pizza. Wait a minute. I don't think that you qualify. I apologize to everyone involved. I should have checked I should have checked with marketing before I tried giving that away to you. 312-981-7200. What makes you happy tonight? I'm grateful and excited about Sketchfest opening on Thursday. It's going to be 2 weeks of incredible performances from people all over the world. There'll be musical comedy, dance comedy, solo performances, sketch groups. What am I leaving out?
I mean, there's just comedy for kids. Stuff that you won't ever can't even imagine is there. Like, it's just absolutely amazing.
And the Comedy Dance Chicago will be performing on Saturday night at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. You can go to stage773.com for all the ticket information. It is incredible to hang out with all the performers, and the energy is incredible. The theater has these folks that come running in to every single theater. They announce the groups coming up. Everyone, the audience is always so energized by not only the performers themselves, but by all the people who really enjoy doing this incredible event. So go to stage773.com for more information. Michael, tell me something good. What's making you happy?
Making me happy. Honestly, you stole mine. I was going to say Sketchfest, and it's not. I mean, I love performing at it, but it's also, for me, being someone who helps run the festival, the energy is super cool. Like, it's one of those things, like, if you've ever gone to summer camp and you love everyone there that's there with you, and you're just running around having a great time the whole time, and just the energy and the vibe gives you such a high. And it's like, it's awesome. So I'm really looking forward to being at the festival for 8 long, exhausting, amazing days for me. Yeah. Cause I'm there pretty much every hour.
That's going to be, and the thing is that once you're in it though,
it feels so good.
It carries you along, doesn't it?
You're just like, all right, get them in the theater. Come on. All right. Next show. You guys ready? 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 Go. And like, and it's just the production side of it is such a high for me. I love it. That's so cool. I'm really looking forward to it. It's once a year that I get to do this. Yes. So I love it.
Yeah. And you guys gear up for it every single year. Yeah. What year is this? How many have you guys had?
Oh boy. I mean, I joined production teams last year, and it's 15 years, something around
it's
there.
Around. It's one of the biggest. Time. It's one of the biggest in the country.
It is. I think it's the largest in the sketch festival in the country. Yeah.
Excellent. How about you, Danny?
I'm happy right now because you know, I feel like I've failed on a lot of resolutions in my life. You know,
okay.
You know those, like, the New Year's resolutions. So I'm trying something different this year. Okay. Something that I want to keep up doing, and it's you know, having not just this yearly goal, but like, kind of hammering down on like monthly goals, weekly goals. I think that helps me be a more productive person.
Okay.
And I hope that it keeps up. It's a little thing, but it's something that I'm trying to do as much as possible. And I'm not doing too bad so far.
Excellent. Congratulations. Maybe you need like a text buddy to go, hey, I'm not feeling it today.
Yeah.
Right? Text Michael.
Yeah. Yep. Let me know. I'll keep you to it.
Thanks.
How about you, James?
I want to give a shout out. I was briefly at earlier a Chicago institution, and I told the owner this. It was the first time speaking to the owner, but I told him it was my favorite bar in the entire country.
Okay.
Old Town Ale House.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I talked to the owner tonight for the first time. I know I've seen him, Bruce, and we had a great conversation. We got in a political debate with another customer.
Okay.
On the same side.
Which is a great place for it.
Awesome. It is a great place. It's made for conversation, which I love.
It is.
Perfect lighting, curated jukebox. I love it. And it's my favorite bar anywhere.
And Bruce has not been the owner for for that long of a time. I mean, like, for a good amount of time, but it was turned over by the owners. They looked for someone who they knew would take care of it and love it, right?
And I think, exactly. And he totally has.
Yeah. So and the thing, too, is it's cash only.
Yes.
Cash only bar.
Cash only. Yeah. Tamale person comes in sometimes. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Tamale guy.
Tamale guy.
Oh, the tamale guy.
Yeah.
Right now I'm hungry.
$6 for how old am I if he was here right now?
How about you, Tom? Tell me something good.
Well, I don't know if any of you have ever frequented the city of Des Moines, Iowa, but there's a place there called, a couple places called Tasty Tacos.
Oh.
And it's like pretty much, you know, it is not authentic Mexican food in the slightest, even though it is made by a fantastic Mexican family. But they are the best tacos I've ever had. They have like fried shells. The tortillas are fried flour, and there's something about the meat seasoning, and it's so good. But they recently started selling their taco sauce and seasoning packets.
Nice.
And I bought like 10 of each. So I made tasty tacos tonight, and I'm really happy. It was so delicious.
That's the thing, that when you can get a flavor and use it in different ways. It is a happy-making thing.
Oh, so amazing.
Congratulations. I love that. I'm happy, too. I want to tell you another thing. Some folks are texting and asking about Andrea Darlis. She is now hosting a solo show weekly. The debut was earlier, Tuesday night, and that was Andrea and the Reporters. She'll be featuring journalists, including print and broadcast, and as well as important issues throughout the night. So that's going to be every week. And then Frank Fontana and Kathy Hart also have a show once a week. And of course, we've got a lot of Blackhawks games. So you'll have Blackhawks games. I am on 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. every night. And of course, I will also sometimes be preempted by any of the sporting events, the Blackhawks or White Sox. And then Nick D, of course, every night, 1 to 5 a.m. And then your morning bell starts at 6 a.m. with Steve. And Steve Cochran takes over. That's at 5 a.m. for the morning bell. Steve Cochran at 6 a.m. Everything else is as you know it throughout the day. So that's what's going on in this time slot. So Andrea Darlis had a great first show, and it's always cool when Steve Burness is on, because he's from the Better Business Bureau, and he talks about a lot of the scams, and people really just, they want to find out like what to be on the lookout for. Like, I get these calls all the time from Restricted. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to Google and find out, and apparently if you answer it, you can backtrack and find out where that phone number is coming from. So I was glad to learn that, because I'm like, who's bugging me? More in a moment on 720 WGN.